moxie, force of character, determination, or nerve. I'm Sierra Benson, and you're listening to The Moxie Mindset. This podcast is designed to help you grow a healthier, growth-oriented mindset. I've reached out to college professors and professionals who have agreed to come into the studio to help us learn more in depth about the communication and leadership skills we need to succeed. Thank you for joining us on The Moxie Mindset. I'm super stoked for today's episode. Carly Madsen has a master's degree in professional communication and other degrees and certificates in mediation, psychology, leadership, and conflict management. She is currently teaching for the communications department at Utah State University and has taught courses in conflict management, interpersonal communication, and public speaking. She is also a co-director and founder of a conflict training organization called the Center for Collaborative Conflict. Carly has a deep interest in collaborative conflict, shame resilience research and skills, grief recovery, forgiveness, self-awareness, motivational interviewing, listening, value discovery, and pedagogy. She has given workshops and presentations on many of these subjects and finds great satisfaction connecting with others on these ideas. Carly is married to Brian and has an adorable 4-year-old son, Parks. She grew up and currently lives in Utah. She enjoys staycations, good food, and pickleball. Thanks for coming on, Carly. I really enjoyed the time that we've had throughout the past semester or so. We're in a class together about space making, and I just kind of wanted to get a little bit of a grasp. How did you start into that work? What led you to wanting to expand it to other people and share that knowledge with them?
Yeah. So I guess I would have to define what quote unquote my work is and how I discovered, I guess, my call to the work that I have in my life and the purposes that I feel drawn to there. My work and what I want to be able to share with the world, or my gifts or my talents or my hopes with the world, surrounds this idea of how we as individuals can be happier, how we can develop our best selves, how we can develop our talents, and how we can show up for other people in the world with our own unique gifts. And I guess my call, my purpose came from, of course, my experience with my journey of just developing as a human being on the earth. And I, in my young childhood years, I had a lot of anxiety. We have an anxiety disorder that runs in our family. And that kind of was a springboard for me to have a lot of shame, perfectionism, comparison, judgment issues as a girl in my teenage years. I had a lot of comparison issues, body image issues. I think a lot of teenagers maybe kind of go through that phase, especially women. And I just had a lot of internal conflict that was happening with me. So as a person who is a recovering shamer, or a person who shamed myself, I had a lot of like inner dialogue that just wasn't serving me, wasn't working for me. And it was actually really making me suffer. And so I wanted to find a way that I could be happier and have more inner peace, and also develop my own gifts that I could share with the world, my own unique gifts. So I had a lot of conflict. I had a lot of shame. I had a lot of insecurities and unknowns in my teenage years. And so into my 20s, when I started getting an education, I selfishly was getting an education for myself. I wasn't super focused on what am I going to do for a career. I was seeking out information that would heal me, because I had a lot of suffering that I was experiencing. I had a lot of confusion, and I really gravitated towards subjects and concepts and ideas and theories that, when I applied them into my life, I started feeling better about myself emotionally and physically, and not only feeling better about myself, but then I wanted to share myself more with the world. And so that kind of led me on my journey to study things like psychology. I studied leadership. So my undergraduate is in leadership and psychology. And then for my master's work, I had lots of really beautiful things in my undergraduate work that helped me to live a more fulfilling life. So it taught me how to set goals, how to lead other people, how to be an influencer, how to be resilient, and really honed me in on my gifts that I had for communication and for organization and event planning and things like that. And then in my master's degree, I felt really drawn to do a program at Weber State in professional communications. And, you know, I'd never really thought about going down the communications foxhole to find things that might help me develop as a human being and heal maybe some of the emotional suffering that I had had from my childhood and youth. But I was really glad that I did, because in my communications program is where I discovered a great passion for conflict and conflict communication. And so I took a couple of classes in my master's program that surrounded conflict, and I was hooked. So like the things that I wanted to, the type of education that I wanted to have in my life and what I wanted to pursue and what I wanted to share with the world, I really found that home in conflict, and understanding conflict pedagogy and how that revolves around self-awareness and willingness and our values and our boundaries and how we talk to other people and how we feel and think and act and behave to ourselves and to the world around us. So that, I just kind of had this like long, just like step-by-step journey that kind of unfolded piece by piece as I looked for things in my life that would help me be happier, help me live more wholeheartedly, as Brené Brown might say, and to help me feel like I could be my true authentic self in the world without being so worried about being judged or overwhelmed or put down by what the world might do. And so from then I've started teaching, and I'm going to be teaching conflict in the fall at Utah State University, a full conflict class. And I've just surrounded everything in my life and what I do with, how we can get to a place in our lives where we can be authentic, know our skills, know our passions, and, live wholeheartedly. And then space making, so the class that we're taking together. So space making came out of these classes and conversations that I had with my mentor and friend, Claire Canfield, where we want to teach and develop places and spaces or people who can create spaces for other people to show up and figure out their own internal battles and work, and work through conflicts in a safe space where no one's going to judge them or expose them or give them advice or try and fix them. It's just places where space makers or people, these communication therapists or coaches, can help people work through their conflicts. And so that's what our class is and kind of what brought me into space making in this whole long journey, right? My education isn't separate from myself. It is who I am. And my education has given me a lot of healing and self-discovery. And it's helped me to live a more full and opportunistic life. And it's just been, just a great source of healing for all my anxiety and mental everything. So that was a big, long introduction, I guess, for how we got here and why I'm here and why I love it and the passions that I have around these subjects.
Thank you. I have loved listening to your story, and I relate to it a lot, mostly just because I've taken the same path in my own education. I'm doing communication studies because I found it to be really helpful for me. I originally went into it because I would have a really hard time connecting with people. I wanted to do things and lead people, but didn't know how to get my points across in an effective manner in a way that doesn't make people mad. and so I gravitated towards this, and I started doing leadership and management as a minor, just kind of to develop myself and to be able to maybe hopefully share that with people if I can just apply all the concepts in my communication studies major, and then I'll get the right types of conversations. I will have the perfect results, and I'm going to be a great person and a great leader. And I feel like that's kind of the story with a lot of people. I've talked with some of my friends in the same classes, and a lot of people gravitate towards communication studies because there's been a problem in their life and they don't know how to fix it. And communication studies open that door for them. I don't know. What are your thoughts on just kind of that route? I know that we all, that me and you and a couple of others in the space making class have kind of touched on, that where we had to really discover it for ourselves, and now we have to sit in this process oriented field instead of coming for the results that we were looking for.
Yeah. So when I hear your story, it makes me think of a couple of things that maybe relate to mine and might be useful for listeners. Is this idea that our education, which isn't just formal education, right? It's not just what we do in a university setting, but the books we read and the experiences that we have and the conferences that we go to. And I mean, oh my word, having my first child was so much more of a learning experience than almost any of my formal education could have given me in terms of awareness of where I was and how I was working with my shame and perfectionism. And so this idea that our, as we seek for knowledge and as we seek for education and how that can transform us, I believe that education at its truest form, that learning at its truest form, creates transformation within us or creates change. And it makes me think about the change process. And so all of this, two things. The ability for us, as we seek knowledge that can heal us or knowledge that helps us solve problems or challenges that we're experiencing, is, do we have the capacity to see? Do we have the capacity to awake to what's happening or be aware of what's happening both inside of us and outside of us that are causing our challenges? So there was a great researcher, Tasha Urich. She created a book called Insight. And she talks about how in her research that 95% of people think that they're self-aware, right? We know about ourselves. We know our passions, our values, our wants, our desires, our aspirations, our environments that we need to be successful or whatever that might be. 95% of us think that we are self-aware. But her research shows that actually 10% of us really are. So that means what she says on any given day, that 85% of us are lying to ourselves that we know whether or not we're self-aware. And that's kind of a big eye-opener, is how, so if only 10% of us are self-aware, how can we develop self-awareness and see what is truth, what is not, what is hurting us, what are the patterns, behaviors, patterns of thinking, relationships that we engage in that are causing us to stay stuck or stay in these challenging, unproductive, suffering places. And so education for me has given me some awareness around, so the classes that I've taken in college or in higher education have helped to open my eyes to, wow, I had no idea that this thing that I feel is labeled perfectionism or shame or judgment, and that it has certain behaviors and patterns of thinking that go around that. And I also didn't know that there was research that can teach me how to be resilient and how to overcome perfectionism and shame. And so this idea of awareness, can we become aware of how are we thinking and feeling about ourselves? Where are we getting stuck in our conflicts? Where are we feeling safe and where are we not feeling safe? Can we become aware of what's going on for us? And awareness comes in two ways. So if we want to become more aware, it comes in two parts. We can become self-aware either through self-reflection or through feedback from others. And those are the really two sources for how we become aware. And self-reflection might be something like journal writing. So I know for me, in my journey of becoming aware of my anxiety and my perfectionism and my shame and those things that were keeping me stuck, those conflicts inside of me that were keeping me stuck, I did something called morning pages. And morning pages aren't like crying pages, like MOURNING, but morning, like in the daytime. And this was an activity developed by Julia Cameron. She wrote a book called The Artist's Way. And she wrote this activity called morning pages to help artists get unstuck when they felt like their creative energy just wasn't flowing. And the premise of morning pages is that every day you sit down in the morning, but I do it any time of day or any time that I need it, and you write for 3 solid pages. And even if you don't know what to write, you just write, I don't know what to write right now. And I'm writing and I'm looking at my blank wall, or I'm looking at my pen, or, and then you just keep writing until you've done 3 pages. And what was really interesting for me and for a lot of people who have done this activity is that around page two and a half, we start uncovering some things that we're thinking and feeling about our lives or about ourselves or about what's going on for us. And that is where we really start to see some awareness happening for how we're thinking, feeling, behaving, what we want, what our values are, what, where we're getting stuck, what our strengths are, what our weaknesses are. And when we do that, or when people have done that consistently, done morning pages consistently over a long period of time, we are able to develop a lot of awareness, which is with what's happening for us. So I did morning pages, oh my word, for the greater part of 2 years. And I filled notebooks and notebooks and notebooks. And that was one of my grounding places where I began to understand how I thought and how I felt. My good friend and mentor, Claire Canfield, who I've mentioned before, he's always said to me, you know, we really don't know how we think and feel until we speak it or we write it down. And so for me, speaking a lot of my like internal conflicts wasn't something I was super comfortable with. And I didn't feel like I had a community that I could do that, but writing in notebooks was safe. And I just started writing and writing until I gained some more self-awareness. So that was one thing that I've done. Another thing, some other activities that I've done to become aware, I've done what's called a values card sort. And for the listeners out there, you can just Google values card sort. It was created by some researchers in a university, I believe in Arizona. And you can just do that activity. It's just a place where you go through this activity and kind of narrow down on what some of your values are. And then there's a whole bunch of activities that you can ask yourself in terms of, do you know what your passions are? And start writing about what am I passionate about? Do you know what your values are? Do you know what your aspirations are, your ideal environments? Do you know your personality traits, your strengths, your weaknesses? Do you know what's important to you? Do you know what you want? These are all activities that you can use or questions you can use to help you start brainstorming and understanding. Also, a really great question is, where am I suffering? Where am I getting stuck? What's working and what's not working in my life? So those are all some really great questions. So that's kind of this first component of self-awareness. And then the second one, getting feedback from others. You know, I ask myself this and those around me all the time. When was the last time that you purposely sought out feedback from someone? And I have to say, I don't get it very often and I don't seek it out very often. As a perfectionist, it frightens me. Like I want to know what people think about me, but I don't really want to know what people think about me because it frightens me. I'm afraid of judgment. I'm afraid that they'll see the true me and find it lacking. And then if that's just who I am and in their eyes, I'm found lacking, like, well, what can I do? Right. And so asking for feedback is such a courageous, brave, scary, risky, vulnerable thing. But feedback from people, getting feedback from people who have earned the right to give us feedback, who we trust, or who might give us some good perspectives, is such a great way for us to be able to gain some awareness of what's working and what's not working in our lives. So, for example, I had a good friend who I knew for a lot of years. Well, actually just for a short amount of time, maybe a couple of years. And this friend all of a sudden was like, Carly, I think you're struggling with perfectionism. And I was like, what? No, I'm not a perfectionist. My house is super messy. I'm not a perfectionist. And so then over the course of time, this friend just kept saying, no, Carly, like, I think you've got some perfectionistic shame type tendencies. And I was like, no. And it took 3 or 4 months of this person consistently giving me the feedback that I was acting in perfectionistic ways that was being fueled by shame before I finally had this like aha moment that was like, maybe they're seeing something that I can't see. And it was actually that person's feedback that allowed me to see that I did have shame and I was a perfectionist and I was judging and comparing myself to others. And that was leading me to suffering. I could not develop that with my own self-awareness. I needed feedback from someone else. So just this idea is as we're like journeying through our educational experience or our learning experience, are we doing the types of activities that are going to help us become most aware, both self-reflection and soliciting feedback from others. And both of those topics have so much that can be talked about, but just the idea of, are we doing that? And can we become more aware of what's happening for us?
So when we're in this kind of a shame spiral that I found myself in last year, I was overcompensating with my need to feel accomplished, to be seen as the best, as a good person, super likable, she can do anything. I found myself in that moment where I'm like, oh, and it took me a little bit of feedback too. I'm a perfectionist and I'm loving being busy. I'm loving staying in this busyness, feeling like I'm so strung out and stressed out. But it gave me a sense of like necessity. I'm here because I need to be busy and be there for other people. I know in my journey, I've personally heard about morning pages quite a few times now from our classes. And I'm like, that is a great concept. That's so great. How do I actually get myself to do this? Because I, as a person, don't want to spend time on myself. As a perfectionist who likes to be really outwardly focused, it feels really selfish to want to sit down and like maybe set a timer for 20 minutes when I could be doing 20 minutes of homework. Mm. How did you work around that? I know that that might have been a struggle for you to really give yourself that time.
Yeah. So, you know, this brings me into the idea of kind of what you were saying, like, great, Carly, like awareness is fantastic, but then what do you do with it? And that comes to kind of the second process of the change, or the second step in the change process, which is cultivating willingness. Like, how do I cultivate the willingness to actually sit down and do morning pages, or change my perfectionistic tendencies, or learn more of the resilient strategies, or even practice them to help me overcome my shame resilience? And willingness is another one of those things that has two ways. So we cultivate willingness either through beauty or affliction. So through beauty, right? Like whenever I watch The Blind Side, I just think that movie is incredible. I love just this idea that you have people helping other people and just all of it. And when I watch that show, I'm seriously like, yes, like the world is beautiful. I want to go out and change the world. Like it gives me energy to want to do my own work because I see other people being courageous, doing beautiful, good things for the world. And so also when I'm out in nature or I see beautiful artwork or I'm with my son or my family or anything that cultivates or touches on those deep values that I have inside of me that just produces beauty, that gives me energy to want to do my work. And then the second thing, which sadly is usually more the kicker for me, is pain. Or affliction. So things just get so bad, or we just hit rock bottom, that something has to change. We cannot go on anymore. And I guess my story with that is, you know, I had gone 31 years of perfection, shame, looping, unhappiness. And it had been working for me because we have strategies in perfectionism that help us feel pseudo relief, right? If I can make my house look perfect, or if I can make my body look perfect, or if I can do something that makes me feel like I've earned my worth and praise from other people, then that gives me kind of a pseudo temporary relief to the suffering that I'm feeling around my self-worth. And so I had done that cycle so many times, but once I had so when I was 31 years old, I had my first child, my son. And I went from a world of, I had a healthy body, thin and trim. I had freedoms. I could go and like just hustle for all the love I could possibly want. And then I became a mom, and not only a mom, but a full-time stay-at-home mom. And I was isolated. No one saw me. My body, I didn't recognize it anymore. Plus it had been kind of disabled after having my son. I got super, super sick after having my son. I've got a bunch of autoimmune disorders. And so I was for the first 6 months of my son's life, I could hardly get out of bed. And I was so depressed with postpartum depression. And so I had no one outside anymore. I wasn't in a job anymore. I had very few places where I could hustle for love anymore. And then here I am, ugly, fat, sick, disabled, ill, in bed with a child that I didn't know how to raise, right? Like I was just in the worst place of my life. And also giving birth to my son was very traumatic. Most women don't have as traumatic of a story, but I almost died giving birth to my son. And then a few months later, after giving birth to my son, I got pneumonia for a month. And then I had kidney stones. And then I got ciprofloxacin poisoning. And then I got postpartum depression. I just remember thinking like, I am ready to leave this world. Like someone will love and come and take care of my son, but like my body could just not get it together. And at about 10 months postpartum, I finally woke up. Well, 10 months postpartum, we bought a house. My health was kind of getting a little bit better. And I was at this place where I was like, great. Like I have a son, I have a husband, I have a house. Like, where is the happiness? Let the happiness descend upon me. But it didn't come. I still had this weird, empty, I don't like myself feeling. And I had just been through the worst year of hell. And I just thought, wow, I really don't know what I'm doing. Like, I really don't know how to be happy. Like the affliction in my life from that year was so intense and I was out of options. Like I had been to doctors. I had just everything. I was out of options. And that's when I was like, all right, I need to start learning and start shifting and start doing something different than I've ever done before. And then a few months later is when I took my first conflict class in my master's program. And I learned all about morning pages. And I'm like, great, if you want me to morning page, if that's going to make me feel better about myself, I'll do the morning pages. And so anyways, like my affliction just got so bad. Like something had to change or I was going to die either spiritually or physically. Like I couldn't go on living so miserably. And so I hope for most people that like beauty tends to be the thing that like helps them like get to a place of willingness. But affliction also can get us there as well. And I guess for me, I had this big, like life-changing experience that I was like, I felt like I hit rock bottom. And then I was like, I have to change. Like, I want to be something different. I want to think and feel differently about myself and about the world. Like, I can't keep hating on myself as much as I've been doing, right? Because also when you're like a new mom, stay-at-home mom in 2020, you're going to go on social media and then you're just going to compare yourself to all the other moms. And then you're just going to compare your houses and your body. Like the comparison trap that same year was horrific. And I finally had to just give social media a boot for a while because as a shamer, it was like my drug of choice. And so anyway, so that was a little bit of my journey of how I've cultivating some willingness and ideas around willingness.
Oh, that brings up a lot of my own stuff. Be honest with you, Carly. I'll just share a little bit for like the listeners out
please.
There.
Please. I would love to hear your story. Yeah.
Because, well. Yeah, it's definitely, I don't know, for me, it's like, oh, it's not as traumatic as Carly's by any means, but it, you know, it's still
the comparison, right?
To accept it, all the comparison.
Don't compare mine.
But for me, oh my word, I know. For me, I learned this stuff January of 2020. I just got into my first conflict class and I was like, cool, conflict, how do I master it? Get to this class done and I will be a master of it all and I'm done. And that was definitely not the case because I had been so outwardly focused for so long that my self-care was just like non-existent. And I'm still working on it now. But at that point, I literally didn't have time to shower most days. Like, it was at that point where I'm like, oh, like I haven't showered for like 2 days because I've been running around on campus doing all the things. Like, good thing that dry shampoo exists. But it was around that point when the boyfriend started giving feedback, you should probably take care of yourself. and conflict, saying self-care is essential for you to be able to get through this process, that I started coming to the terms and I started wanting to be in that process. And I'd never really fully committed. I was just halfway out. I was on the fence. I was like, this looks great. This is awesome. I know that this is going to help me, but I physically don't have the time. Like, this is very cute. Kind of a fun little dream state we're in conflict class. And then COVID hit this time last year, actually, like in a week last year. Yeah. And my entire world came to a halt because I had really focused on my worth is the events that I make and the attendance that these events get. And I was in all of the big events on campus at Utah State. We have the Howl. There are 5,000 people minimum that come to the Howl. Mardi Gras is huge. It's the one that is just for Utah State. So there's about like 4,000 people. And I was planning, I had started planning the biggest end of year bash that they've had ever, where we were going to bring in some of the bigger names in alternative music. We had 5 different entities on campus that were coming in for this one event spanning like the entire day. And I was so excited because I'm like, this is going to be the best thing Utah State's ever seen. I'm going to get all of the awards. Everyone's going to say I'm a good person and it's going to be so fun. And then COVID completely wiped it out. I was recently looking back on past stories that I had on my Instagram, and it said the only thing that could stop the giant concert and event that I had commenced is a dang plague.
Yeah.
And that's how I had it. That was my self-worth. And I had a come apart the week before that it was supposed to happen. It was supposed to happen like April 17th, like it was a big deal for me. I know the date still. Mm-hmm. And I'm still in process trying to like really come to terms with the fact my self-worth is not based on these things. And I had not had a panic attack like that in months, but it got to the point where I'm like, the thing that I was working on for like 7 months is supposed to happen next week and it's not. And I'm a failure. My boyfriend was there and I was like sobbing. I'm like, I'm a failure, Luke. Like I didn't do anything this year. I hadn't made any kind of impact in the school year. And he like had a look at me. He like held both my shoulders and he's like, your worth is not based on this event. You did so many things this year. You were on 5 different committees. You won all of these awards. Sierra, you're a good person, even though this event is not going to happen. And that's when I kind of started realizing, whew, this self-care stuff, this conflict stuff, it's the real deal. And I need to get on board. Or this is how my life's going to be every time something gets canceled. Yeah. And I'm still coming to terms with that. But it's a journey. And
yeah,
it's really cool to look back and be compassionate towards yourself, while it is hard seeing where you are right now and how far you want to go because of those perfectionistic tendencies, especially as a leader in the things that I'm doing right now in Aggie Radio and in all of the different capstone projects I'm doing. Mm-hmm. How did you kind of come out of that? How did you, from that point where you're like, I'm going to die if I don't do these things, how was the process? I'm sure that it wasn't, oh, I'm starting to do these things and everything is all better now.
Mm-hmm, right. Wouldn't that just be the perfectionistic way? Oh, I just discover what's wrong and now let's just perfectionistly fix it. Right. That's what we want. Mm-hmm. I loved how some of the things that you brought out in that story talked about your awareness of how shame was showing up for you. And for you, it was showing up in perfectionistic tendencies that led you to feel like you needed to hustle or earn your worth. And you use the word worth a lot. And that is the foundation that shame is built upon. Shame, perfection, judgment, comparison is this idea of worth and our questioning of whether or not we are quote unquote of worth. And so whenever I know for me, my behaviors that tell me that I am kind of starting to swirl in shame is when I'm hustling for love, which is like perfectionistic thinking, like, or when I'm judging or comparing myself to other people. That's like immediately in my mind, like, whoa, Carly, you are coming into question of whether or not you're worthy. And then you're defining your worth based on if you're better or worse than someone. And that's kind of that judgment trap that I get stuck in. And so, again, for our listeners and just listening to you, this idea of how is shame showing up for you in your life? And can you see it? Are you aware of it? And then be able to do something about it. And then it all kind of just connects back to this premise of, if you are experiencing shame in any types of its variety, there is the foundational issue that is suffering is how you feel about your own worth. And ooh, those words can be so painful for years. In fact, even just until maybe a year ago, it was hard for me to look myself in the mirror in the eye and tell myself I loved myself. Like, I couldn't do it. Gave me the heebie-jeebies. Like, it made me be like, I'm not this like flower power potion person that's like, I'm in love with myself and the world. Like, I just couldn't do it. Like, it didn't feel true to me. And that was a hard awakening for me. Like, Carly, like, you have to realize that you don't like yourself, or that you really question whether or not you're of worth. And so that can be a hard realization. And that can be kind of this place where I never wanted to go to. I was always afraid of it. And then I had shame for feeling shame, right? Like, I felt ashamed that I didn't like myself, because that was like so icky or whatever. Like, I guess I was a worse person because I didn't like myself. Oh, it's such a hot mess, which was great. You know, it's just my journey. But this idea of worth, and, you know, for listeners out there, if this is resonating for you, or if, you know, something about this idea of worth is resonating for you, you know, maybe, you know, you can ask yourself. I know I did. I asked myself my question, well, what is worth? And who defines it? And what am I striving for? Like, what is it that I, like, what worth am I trying to earn? Like, what does the end goal actually look like? And so taking a step back and saying, this is how I define worth and what it looks like for me and how it's given, and how I have it, that can be really eye-opening for how you even see or experience yourself and how you value yourself. And for me, it's going to be different maybe for everyone, but for me, I came to a place where worth is just innate. Like, it's not earned, and it's not something that goes up or down. It's not something that I get more worth or less worth. Like, it's just kind of like an infinite, always set thing that, like, I am of worth, and there's no standard that makes it higher or worse. Like, I could be a super great person to humanity and my worth is still the same. I could be a super shitty person to humanity and my worth is still the same, right? Like, we have to, if we are shamers, if we are perfectionists, if we tend to lean into these things, it might be helpful for us to stop and take a look at how we're seeing and defining worth. So that just kind of came for me. And then, you know, maybe just like you asked, like, how did I come up out of that? Well, I didn't do it alone. That's for sure. I had to get a therapist. So I worked with a therapist for many, many months. I also had to go on some medication that could just help my brain have some more serotonin so that I could just, because I had an anxiety disorder and I still do. And so I went on medication that helped my brain stop rushing as quickly and stop ruminating as harshly, and allowed me a little bit more serotonin, which made me a little bit happier. I also had to reach out to a community of people to support me, friends, parents, my spouse, and I had to just start talking about it. And oh, as someone who has shame, like that is the last thing shame wants me to do, is start wrapping language around it with other people, because that's the number one thing that diffuses shame's power, is talking about it. And so I had to have the courage and the willingness to just start talking to people about the things that were really hard or the things that I didn't like about myself. I also had to just start learning more about shame. So the more I've come to learn about it and the tools of resiliency, I can start engaging in those when I see myself doing shame type behaviors. And so I had to learn, I had to get educated, and I had to surround myself with a support system that helped me feel like I wasn't alone, because shame wants you to feel alone. So I gained that community. And one of the, there's so many tools that I've learned, but one of the tools that I've come to realize that if I'm trying to overcome shame, and again, there's lots of tools, but one tool that really helped me gain a lot more peace and stopped suffering as much and allowed me to start liking myself a little bit more. I just want to like put out a warning to your listeners, you know, if you are a perfectionist or a shamer listening to this, like this might make you want to throw up in your mouth, but, cause I know for me, it did, was that I actually didn't know how to have self-compassion. I was so good. I had lived 30 plus years at perfecting the ability to shame myself, and I had almost zero experience, and I had almost no understanding of how to cultivate or lean into or what it even looked like to have self-compassion. I had to be taught at almost a foundational, like kindergartner level, this is what self-compassion is, and this is how you do it, and this is how you engage in it. And it's going to feel so backwards, so against nature, because I have used shame as the foundation for my identity for so long. But researching, studying, participating in, working in my communities to help me cultivate self-compassion, resilience, or use that with shame, has been one of the greatest lifelines for me in overcoming shame and being okay with who I am and learning to love myself again. One book that I read that was just quintessential, just such a pillar for me in my journey, was Self-Compassion by Kristen Neff. She gives lots of great tools and ideas in there about how we can be more self-compassionate. And then I put myself on the hook with my friends and my community and my family to say, I'm really struggling with self-compassion. Can you help me and help me become a person who can be more self-compassionate? And so if self-compassion is like making you either want to throw up or if it's resonating in you, that's just some great awareness that you've had while you're listening or while you're experiencing this, that perhaps that might be an avenue that could provide you some relief and some development and get you unstuck from where you are.
Oh, I love that. That's one of those books that I constantly get told that I should listen to or read. And I say, that's cute. I should do that sometime.
Yeah.
But, you know, as this is probably the 8th time I've been told, it's good for self-compassion. Maybe I should be compassionate and get the book.
The resistance is real. We have so many good shame resistance, like, tactics as, you know, shamers and perfectionists, that it took me a long time to be like, literally self-compassion was like a vomit word on my mouth, like, ugh, self-compassion, ugh, you know, so you're not alone.
I've loved this conversation, Carly, so thank you so much for coming on. I've loved the journey that we've both been on, that you've helped me with. You've been one of my mentors as I've been going through my own journey in self-compassion, mm-hmm. rumbling with perfectionism. I do ask my guests two questions at the end of every podcast. The first is, what would you tell your younger self?
Okay, well, that's a really great question. And I guess this just makes me think about, and maybe this might be a little bit longer than you wanted, but it makes me think about how one of the ways that I would hurt myself, or I would suffer, or I would produce shame, is that I would often look back on who I was and the things that I had done and, you know, the best efforts that I had given, and I would shame my previous self. So it was like, not only am I currently shaming myself in my present world, but I would look back on myself, my younger self, and be like, oh, Carly, seriously, girl, you should have gotten it together a little bit better. You know, I would look at pictures of my hairstyles or how I would do my makeup or relationships that I had or things that I might have said in a talk or a speech or just interactions I had had, you know, in my 20s or in my teens, and just almost feel embarrassed for myself that I was, that I couldn't have been better. And so I've actually had to do a lot of work in not looking back and shaming myself for who I was in those moments, and instead cultivate a place, this idea of, you know what, that Carly who was 15 or that Carly who was 12 or that Carly who was 8 or 4 years old, because even when I was really young, I had anxiety and I really struggled, or that girl who was in her 20s or the girl who was dating or in college or just trying to navigate her world, that Carly was doing the very best that she could. And she was striving, and she was doing the best with the knowledge that she had at the time. And I'm so proud of her. I'm so proud of who I was in all the phases of my previous self. And I know that as I look forward in the future, that I'm going to just keep growing and progressing. But it feels really great in the present moment in my life now to say, I'm doing the very best I can, and I'm okay with that. And I know that tomorrow and the next day, I'll be better at whatever I'm doing, because that's the type of person I am. But who I am today and who I was when I was 20 or 25 or 10 or 4 years old, like, that girl was just doing the best that she could. And I'm really proud of her. And I love her. And I think she's incredible. And so I guess if I were to go back and tell my previous self something, I would want her to see me who I am right now. Like, I'd want the 12-year-old Carly to see the 35-year-old Carly, or the 25-year-old Carly to see the 35-year-old Carly, and see how much love that the 35-year-old Carly has for the 12-year-old Carly or the 25-year-old Carly, and just reassure her that who you are right now is enough, and you are doing the very best you can, and that is so awesome. It's exactly where you need to be, and just keep going on your journey, and know that we will be happy and that we will love ourselves, and that I love who I am now, and I love who you are, no matter what age you are. And so that might just be something that I'd want to share or give to my previous self at any stage.
Oh, thank you so much. I know I needed to hear that, especially looking back on where I was and where I am now and where I'm going to be in 10 years. The last question I have is, are there any links that you would like us to share, or where listeners could find you? What are you up to in the fall? Where could we find you then?
Yeah, I have a professional account on Instagram that people are welcome to follow me there. It's Professor Carly Madsen. And that's just a place where I go to just connect with all my students that I've had. I'm also on Instagram. I'm part of the Center for Collaborative Conflict that's hopefully going to start happening at Utah State University. And so we have an Instagram page that's at Collaborative Conflict. You can follow me there. I'm also a trainer and a consultant for Canfield Consulting, and that website is collaborativeconflict.com. So I have a profile there, and I give trainings and speeches, and can be found, all my information can be found there. And then in the fall, I'll be working for Utah State in the Communication Studies Department, teaching in conflict, and then also working with building the Center for Collaborative Conflict on Utah State's campus, where we engage in all types of these conversations that relate around collaborative conflict.
I'm so excited to see you here on campus in the fall, Carly. Thank you for coming on. It was a stellar conversation, and I'm really excited to be able to share it with everyone else.
Well, Sierra, thank you for having me. This has been a treat. Thank you.
Hey, it's Sierra, and I hope you enjoyed that episode. I hope it led you to a more positive mindset, a more defined view of leadership, and some action items to take along with you. For more information, you can check out the Moxie website at themoxiemindset.org. Thanks for tuning in today, and I'll see you next week on The Moxie Mindset.